Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, January 21st, 2021. Certainly a good day for markets yesterday on Biden's inauguration day in the U.S. We have the whole broader stock market, not just concentrated in the high-tech names, almost exploding higher. There was actually one day earlier this year, I noticed, at least in the NASDAQ, that was even better than this one, surprisingly. But this was a positive day, dramatic new highs for the cycle in the U.S. And somewhat curiously to me, not really showing up in the bond market as we saw Treasury sort of dribbling a little bit higher, i.e. long yields lower. But Peter, in our internal meeting, you were saying that you're pretty impressed with how broad this move was yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Because you had a pretty spectacular rally across the board in technologies as well, and you would have expected that. Some of the very sensitive high growth pockets of the market would have done extremely well, but it was not really the case. We're building out this theme basket so we can monitor the market in a different way. And actually, on slide 9, I'm jumping a little bit, and we'll go back again, of course. But there, I have the small performance overview, and you can see that sort of you would have expected a segment like bubble stocks would have done very well yesterday, but also and our commodity sector basket didn't outperform the market either. So to me, it was just an indication that it was more broad based, less on narrow themes. So that I think is definitely a positive. And then the last two days have been very good on earnings, as I try to show here on slide 3, John. And we have had almost 10% of the S&P 500 companies reporting so far before today, with a 91% positive to price ratio. And I think when I scan through the various management discussions sections in the earnings releases, when I add it all up, to me, when I compare it to what I read in Q3, there's companies are definitely lifting their outlook in Q4 despite of the new lockdowns both in Europe and in some places in the US as well. I think a lot of the outlook is for companies is basically discounting a successful rollout of these vaccines, which will lift economic activity, and that in itself becomes then, I think, the biggest downside risk for markets. Because if we are not successful, and you mentioned that, John, that California apparently is having big troubles of rolling out these vaccines, and that could be the thing that actually sets equities off if we don't manage to live up to our expectations for the rollout.
Yeah, well, on the California thing, just some headlines that I found disturbing, but and I want to connect that actually to the incoming President Biden, because we wrote a long article yesterday and put it out on analysis.saxo. I just retweeted it from the Saxo Market Call Twitter feed, outlining his priorities as president: five domestic policy areas and five foreign policy areas that he'll have to concentrate on in his presidency, and that the market will also be concentrating on. And number one, job number one, and he's declared this himself from what he likes to call day one, which was yesterday, is to get ahead of this vaccine. So I think you'll see an impressive scale of the federal response. How well it's coordinated, how successful it is, I don't know, but it'll certainly be more forceful than what we saw under Trump. And we have to see how that develops. We have to also track Israel, which we've noted is that something like 30% who've received their first shot. However, there, the ramping there has been so rapid that what we're seeing in terms of cases and deaths and so on is still some things that happened probably a couple weeks ago when the rate was at 10% or lower. Certainly on the death side, which often takes 3 to 4 weeks before somebody dies of this virus. So still number one for us to track this. And doesn't necessarily mean it's always bad for markets, because sometimes the logic creeps in that the more virus and lockdowns there are, the more stimulus we get, the more liquidity, the more we can sit at home and speculate and test the call options, et cetera. But you can see on slide 5 the areas that we're focusing on for domestic and foreign for the Biden presidency. And I think there's some interesting points you'll find in that article, especially on the social stability side. I would point out the climate agenda, where we think Biden's going to maybe take it more easy than the headlines would suggest. One of the areas we'll be looking at, Peter, for sure, since the last few years have seen the most outperformance in those big infotech monopoly stocks, will be whether the regulatory fangs are coming out in the U.S. for these big companies, and even as well from the European side in terms of regulation. I think this will be the year where the regulatory bite is much more in focus on actually maybe affecting real business, the real ability to grow their businesses and continue to reap the kinds of profits that they've seen historically. And then on the foreign policy side, I don't want to go through the entire list, but I think the China relations is quite interesting. As I mentioned yesterday in Secretary of Treasury nominee and former Fed Chair Yellen's comments, that clearly she's been briefed on the administration's policy on China. And it was a very aggressive stance that she mentioned. But I think the changes will be in the Biden administration more of style rather than of substance. And we're going to continue to see slipping into sort of a global rivalry between these two superpowers, and China already moving specifically to sanction individuals in the Trump administration, sort of a tit for tat, I guess, of many of the officials that the U.S. Sanctioned in Hong Kong and elsewhere. So I think that's some food for thought on that front. And you've linked, or you're going to link, some of your equity themes, Peter, into some of these thoughts as well, especially on the green side. You talked about this yesterday. And you said you mentioned it as well in the Q1 outlook that, we've seen this huge shift into the green agenda, green investments, and there's just been a massive sort of anything green gets a bid simply because people rotating into the space and there's not enough differentiation. So your exercise at some point here is going to get to drill down a bit and to identify sort of quality green versus green. What did you call it? Speculative green, or what one might call a speculative garbage or rubbish. So some thoughts on that, Peter, and as well, any other basket themes? I think you've got a couple of them here in today's slide deck.
Yeah, I think for Biden, we highlighted back last year that we said get ready for clean energy stocks if Biden wins. On slide 6, you can see the iShares Global Clean Energy Basket there, spectacular run up. I suspect that this is still something you should have as a focus point in your portfolio in the next 4 years. We have also coined it a mega trend for the next 10 years. But it dawned on me on the Q1 outlook when we were writing about our overarching theme of reflation that I also had to comment on our last year's theme, which was the green transformation. And it came to a big surprise. It was a big surprise to me when I looked at the biggest position in this iShares Global Clean Energy Basket, that it was Meridian Energy, which is a hydropower utility in New Zealand, with getting all this exposure there. So basically a low growth environment for this company. And the analyst expectations were actually looking for a flat to slightly negative revenue growth. And here it was trading at almost 90 times earnings. So that made me thinking that I think what we'll see this year is a split into green quality and green speculative, where I think green quality, so proven technologies and not too richly valued, will do well, and a lot of the speculative things will be in for a rough time. But surely a Biden administration look for clean energy. And then also I think Biden's administration will be positive and create a tailwind for our reflation theme. So that means our commodity basket, I will link to that, and also financials, I wrote about that last week, should do well in this environment, especially if we have a rising yield curve. But that, I think we skipped that slide, John. I mean, just quickly, if we go back to slide 4, because we had the comment from the Bank of Japan's Kuroda earlier this morning here, saying that it's important to keep entire yield curve low after a virus. I don't know whether he specifically mentions Japan, or it's a global phenomenon, given it's a synchronized world. I guess his comment is also more global in nature, and it goes actually to Steen Jacobsen's comment in our internal calls. John was saying, I mean, if we're right on this in reflation, what the hell are we doing at 108 in 10-year yields in the U.S. And you can see that on slide 4, we're depressingly low on that yield. And I think the big question here is that maybe central banks, maybe we'll go into reflation, but with extreme deep negative short rates, and then we'll see what the long end of the yield curve does. It feels like that's the case.
Yeah, but it still doesn't make any sense in terms of the narrative of why we get a day like yesterday and we're supposedly celebrating a reflationary potential, and the 10-year yield actually drops maybe a basis point. I mean, there's just no movement there. Is it because the market anticipates an eventual yield cap? They won't allow the rates to go higher. We've seen a couple of Fed officials, or at least one specifically. I remember the Fed's very influential Clarida, who's a voter and is the vice chair, saying he's not concerned with rates at these levels. But it's interesting to see Bank of Japan sending out that comment. There's been nothing going on in the long end of the Japanese yield curve for months, and that long yield is 30-year, for example, is at around 65 basis points. Although it did drop on those comments this morning. But yes, I mean, you know, eventually, if there is a price discovery, you would think, and there's reflation coming, you would think that the last thing people want to own is long treasuries, long maturity fixed income, and that eventually, if the central banks and policymakers fear that those rising rates will then, you know, see rising real rates for long term rates, and then cap those yields, but that's just, you know, that's a future scenario. But it's just a head scratcher to me, and you know, one day does not make a trend. But a day like yesterday and that mismatch between bonds and stocks is quite interesting. So just bears keeping an eye on, especially if yields do finally go higher and then you're waiting for that central bank signal, whether they're going to cap them or not, and at what level. Let's get back to our narrative flow here. As well, Biden moving, obviously, yesterday to quickly unwind as much as he could of the Trump agenda with a number of executive actions. Won't go through a list, but rejoining multilateral institutions, the Paris Climate Agreement, the WHO. I think that's a popular misstep, the WHO. But we'll see how that pans out. And one of the things he did sign was against this Keystone XL pipeline. It did not affect Canada, the Canadian dollar, so much, which I feel it might have should have, because there was a more positive Bank of Canada meeting talking about the potential for a very strong recovery and boost to the economy once we get post-lockdown. More based on that than anything crude oil related. And we're seeing Dollar Canada actually trading at new lows yesterday. You can see that on slide 7. The chart, very choppy for my taste, but that keeps it in that declining channel for now. And then just a couple of thoughts on that Keystone XL pipeline. I think I call it revoking the permit. It's not killed yet, and killing it would mean they have to start dismantling pieces of pipe and selling them for scrap. But the idea here is, as you can see on slide 8, that you have a direct link from those heavier Canadian tar sands and other grades of crude coming out of Alberta. You send them into Nebraska. You combine that with the very light oil coming out of North Dakota and the shale oil, which is very, very light, and you make a nicer mix, which is more refinery ready for the refineries down in, especially in Houston and Port Arthur. Makes perfect sense. But yes.
I just want to chip in as well, because I think the people or the consortium behind the Keystone XL pipeline has also already, they have already been out saying that they want to mitigate some of the negative views from the potential negative views from Biden administration, and try to keep the project alive by saying that they're willing to fuel or create the energy needed for running the pipeline through placing solar cells along the pipeline to fuel all the necessary equipment that makes the pipeline run. So as you said, I don't think we should count it out yet, because from a manufacturing perspective, and we cannot kill the oil and gas industry just yet. I mean, I think we are a couple of decades away from that. So if there's any sense or logical reasoning inside the Biden administration, surely they will look at this and try to, you know, give it a more green profile by maybe allowing these solar cells to be placed.
And as I put on slide 8, if you go to the Keystone XL website, the only thing you can see is windmills and solar panels, because they're trying to market that story that they're going to do an offset. In any case, I just think it's one of these, it's a key issue that tests the rationality of, of this green transformation. Do you really want to, something that's already underway, we're going to burn the oil anyway, and certainly it could affect Canada's ability to get its oil to market. We saw in previous episodes where, when there's suddenly a demand shortfall, their crude grades practically go to $0 cost, because they can't get them to market. What's the balance of rationality versus relative to the green agenda? So just a test case issue there. I think it's rather important to track that kind of signaling on how seriously the Biden administration takes this green agenda. You talked about earnings, Peter, and you've talked about different baskets. And one of those baskets you've been talking about recently is this next generation medicine which is it's not old pharma, it's not biotech, it's next gen. Take us through what are your thoughts there on next gen?
Yeah, it sounds very much like pop culture, because it's not biotech, which is pretty advanced. It's the next level. I know it sounds a little bit silly, but it isn't actually. So you're absolutely right. We introduced our next generation medicine basket, which is basically the, you can call it the next frontier of the biotech industry. The initial biotech industry was a different way of doing drug discovery than the traditional pharmaceutical industry. So still working with drugs in a more traditional way, but in a smarter way. And what we have really seen in R&D, and also, I mean, we've got several Nobel Prize awards in these categories, is that from around 2012-13, you saw a new breakthrough in cell and gene therapy. Gene editing has come along as well, which is the CRISPR technology, where you can go in and actually clip out some gene material. And that that's what's the hope, is that this gene editing technology can help mitigate some of those immune response that you get when you try to do these antibody immune drugs. That has been the problem so far, that you get a negative response from the body's own immune system when you're trying to do things. And a lot of the stocks that are in this list, you can see here on slide 9, I mean, we have selected 30 stocks, and they are sorted on market cap. We've tried to make it pretty balanced, as good as we could, in terms of geography, and have a large share of institutional ownership, because we think institutions have the right people to actually judge whether this is good technology or not. And there are many super interesting companies in this, and we can't go through them here, John. I can only, you know, there's a link on this slide. You can go to that article and read a little bit about these. I'll be talking more about this in presentations as well. So stay tuned for that. But the long-term drivers, as we write here, obviously aging populations in the developed world, we're getting to maturity, or at least seeing maturity of these technologies, as I said, within cell and gene therapy. And then it's an obvious driver that we'll get acquisitions from large pharmaceutical companies. They don't have the risk nature, because they need to preserve share prices. So they keep their drug discovery efforts pretty conservatively. So they like to buy these biotechnology companies. So have a look for that one. And then and on slide 10, just quickly, you can see the performance. There's a little bit of a survivorship selection bias in it. So don't spend too much time on the actual 5-year performance, other than it has been companies that have been bid up and especially last year. I mean, the demand for this has been huge. And I think a lot of that was back to BioNTech, amongst others, that have successfully created a vaccine with the mRNA technology, which is part of this theme as well. And I think that has really caused investors to be bidding up or creating a large demand for these companies, because it shows that these technologies are maybe very, very close to be able to commercialize itself. And John, before I hand it over to you and the macro calendar, just quickly, the earnings today, we already got earnings from Sandvik, which is a very advanced technology engineering group out of Sweden with a global footprint. And they're confirming some signs of this reflation trade. They are having a 15% year-on-year growth in their mining and rock technology business. So very interesting there. They seem pretty upbeat on growth. And then we have Intel and CSX reporting in the US today, where with Intel probably a mixed bag, and CSX interesting because it's a railroad company. So it's probably a good gauge into economic activity.
All right, and I'll charge you with sending out a tweet on the Saxo at Saxo Market Call Twitter account, a link to that interesting topic on the next gen medicine, so we can get that out. So if you don't have to hunt around for the link in the slides, etc. Let's get to the calendar. We have an ECB meeting today. These are increasingly becoming like Bank of Japan meetings, as we're seeing a thorough zombification of the European sovereign bond market and otherwise the entire financial system in Europe. I think it's more interesting to see what happens on the political and fiscal side in Europe. From here, we saw some wobbles in the Italian government over the last few days. They've survived that by the skin of their teeth, and they're going to do a new 32 billion euro package and they're projected to have an almost 9% budget deficit for this year. You know, you start to wonder as we get post-pandemic how this whole budget situation plays out. after that was the big debate and all the austerity that was forced upon them, and has helped the rise of populism in Italy in the whole cycle since the EU sovereign debt crisis in 2010 to 2012, and Italy absurdly running essentially primary surpluses in its budget, and has switched from a deeply current account negative country to a current account positive country, with being forced into a depression for the last 10 years. Pleasant thought there, but it goes to say that I don't see any signals coming out of the ECB that move the needle much. They've already started jawboning on the euro, but that was when it was a little bit higher. They probably ease back on that, but they'll continue to jawbone. And then it's kind of a question, well, what are you going to do about it? Then we have a few U.S. data points of note, watching the jobless claims, et cetera. But we all know we're waiting for these lockdowns to end, and it's all about, probably the April, May, June timeframe for both inflation and how quickly it springs back, and then the activity and the success of the vaccine. I think we'll just call it a day there. Lots to think about as we head into a new era in U.S. politics, and the signals coming from the Biden administration, and how quickly we move to a new stimulus package and the vaccine rollout, et cetera. For today, thanks for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.